Now, our reading today is from John 8. I'm sure you all received one of these as you came in, so the white one. And we've got the reading there, John 8, starting at verse 12, this dispute over what Jesus was saying. So verse 12 says, "When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.' The Pharisees challenged him. 'Here you are, appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid.' Jesus answered, 'Even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid. For I know where I came from and where I am going. But you have no idea where I come from or where I am going. You judge by human standards. I pass judgment on no one. But if I do judge, my decisions are true, because I am not alone. I stand with the Father who sent me.'" Amen. Now, the main focus of what we're going to be looking at this afternoon is in verse 12. Let me just look at it again. "Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.'" Now, of course, Jesus describes himself in quite a lot of different ways. He calls himself a gate on one occasion, bread on another one. He will talk about himself as a door, as a good shepherd, the way, the truth, the life, the true vine. And of course, here we have him describing himself as the light of the world. And each of these ways of describing himself just works. It just kind of gets through to us who he is, better than some sort of long treatise, long written out definition of who he is. By saying these things, it sort of gets to us. We instantly get what he's talking about. If you're hungry and you've been told you can have bread, that gets to us. That gets to us at a level that no matter how many clever words I use, it doesn't quite get there. And when we're told that we live in darkness, but that there's a light, gets to us. There's something about that which needs very little, well, illumination, as it were. The light. How many of us remember being afraid of the dark? Some of us that might be quite recently. For others it might have been as a child, cowering under the covers or something, yeah? Remember being afraid of the dark. You know, and there was this great comfort when the lights were eventually put on. That there would be comfort in the light. Well, I remember being afraid of the dark, and oddly enough, we're quite right to be afraid of the dark. Let's see if any of you recognize this phenomenon. I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. That occurs on occasion. I wake up, it's dark. Even though it's summer, it seems to still be dark, and so I get out of bed, and I pad my way silently to the bathroom. Now, of course, I've got young children, I've got my wife, so don't turn the lights on. I'm confident. I know the layout of the flat. I know where everything should be. So I walk relatively confidently towards the bathroom. And inevitably, I walk into something. Last night, it was a chair. Great big cut right across the shins, you know. A really sore one, you know. Ow! And of course, you're thinking, you can't shout. It's the middle of the night. But you're thinking, who put that there? Until you remember it was yourself. It's all too easy when you're walking around in the darkness to come to a rather painful end. That wouldn't have happened if you'd switched the lights on. It's all too easy to stumble around in the dark. And so when Jesus says he is the light of the world, whoever follows me will not walk in the darkness, it gets to us. It works, as it were. Now, for those of us who have sight, it's an incredible thing. And we rely on it so much. Do you know that even as you're listening to me, you're using your eyes more than your ears? For some of you, that's definitely the case. For some of you, maybe you've been 50-50, but we actually use our eyes when we're listening to somebody, okay? So I'm going to ask you to help me, okay? I'm going to ask you to help me in this small experiment. I'm going to say the same thing three times, but I'm going to maybe look slightly different whilst I do it. So, let's just say that my wife was here, she was there, and I wanted to tell her and convince her that I love her, okay? So I could say, "I love you." Okay, not bad. Okay, that might do it. What about this? I love you. Not very convincing, is it? No. How about this? I love you. Not going to work, is it? We use our eyes. It tells us so much. As a sense, you know, we rely on it so much. The same words. And yet what we see really matters. So the ability to see, it works. So Jesus is light, as opposed to the darkness, not being able to see. I'm odd in a number of different ways, but one of the oddities, as it were, is that I really hate using the telephone. Hate it. I get quite uncomfortable using the telephone. I love speaking to people. I love being able to see people. I like being able to see their face when I'm talking to them. When I've just got their voice to work on, I'm quite uncomfortable. You know, I can't really gauge them on the phone. You know, do they really mean what they say? Because I can't see them. I rely on my sight to tell me what they really mean when they're speaking to me. So the idea of being in darkness, not being able to know what's around us, not being able to really see, it's a big deal. And it should actually make us afraid. It's not the lack of physical light that should scare us. It's that lack of light that Jesus is talking about. The absence of the light of God in our lives, to be able to see things as they really are all around us. And so we stumble about. And as we get older, we tell ourselves, it's okay, we'll get used to being in the dark. But we don't have to be used to being in the dark. We don't have to live like that. And so Jesus comes along, and he claims to be the one who is the light. Now, this is a very loaded phrase. To all the people who were listening to him at that time, they knew what he was saying. You see, they were promised that someone was going to come who was going to be known as the light. Okay, this one was going to come. He's going to change everything. Okay, it's promised in Isaiah, you know, where the nations who are in darkness have seen a great light. You know, it's promised in Zechariah. It's promised, let's be entirely honest, quite frequently. This Messiah. This one to come who's going to change everything. So he's standing there saying, I'm the light. He's saying, I'm the one that was promised to Adam and Eve. I'm the one that was promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. I'm the one that was promised to David and Moses. I'm the one that was promised through all the prophets. I'm the one that was promised to give hope when there wasn't any. In the times of exile and destruction and return, I'm him. I'm the one you've been waiting for hundreds of years. What a thing to claim when he's standing there. And that would have been enough. But he's also claiming something more. He's not just claiming that he is the Messiah. He's claiming something even bigger than that. It's not a big surprise that elsewhere in John's Gospel, when John is writing about Jesus in the opening chapter, in chapter 3, he talks about the light that brings life. And he's saying that Jesus is God. Not just someone sent by God, but God himself. And this is not a big surprise in the Old Testament, which was all of the scriptures for the people who are listening, the entire Bible for the people who are listening. God is very often described as the light. It goes right back to Genesis. So in the beginning, there's darkness. That's all there is. There's just darkness. There's nothing. There's a void. Just darkness and God. And God says, what? What did he say at the very beginning? Let there be light. And there was light. And so from that moment on, there's a sort of a symbolism, a sort of an idea of the dark versus the light, of nothingness, of destruction and chaos compared to peace and order and life. Light, darkness, it has a sort of feel to it. You know, many stories that we have, you know, the light means the good and the dark means the bad. It's very often in many of our stories, and it comes from that very beginning, as it were. Later on, God and his glory of God will be like a pillar of fire as he leads his people through the desert. We can have things like burning bushes, but it goes beyond just that. That he is the light. He brings sight. He brings an ability to see things as they really are and to take the chaos and void that we live into the light. Peace, refuge, comfort, and a lack of fear. Being stuck in the darkness, not knowing what's around you, stumbling and falling, is supposed to be a fearful thing. But the God who is light, there's no need to be afraid anymore. In the Psalms, it talks about God being light very often. Psalm 27 verse 1 says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the refuge of my life. So of whom shall I be afraid?" It's beautiful. And of course, you've got to bear in mind what Jesus is saying and where he's saying it. He's saying this. He's saying, "I am the light," in the temple. The ultimate place where God was supposed to be. You know, the ultimate dwelling of God amongst the people. He's standing in the temple where God is supposed to be amongst the people. And he's saying, "Look, I'm here amongst you." He says it just after the Feast of Tabernacles. Very important feast. It's a feast which plays a lot on the idea of light and darkness. And one of the things that they would do is they would light all the candles in the temple. They'd have this great candelabra in front, and they would set it alight, and the light would go forth. Because the light was a symbol of God being with his people. He's within almost touching distance of that candelabra. And he says, "I am the light." Just following the great festival where they've been celebrating God as light. His hearers knew what he was saying. Do you know that some people think that that Jesus never claimed to be God? Some people genuinely think that. Well, that's not what his hearers heard. His hearers, later on in this chapter, in verses 58 to 59, they react. They pick up stones to throw at him. They actually want to kill him for what he says. When he's eventually crucified, he is crucified on a charge of blasphemy for claiming to be God. His hearers knew full well what he was saying when he was saying these things. And he also said a rather key trigger phrase as well. He didn't just say that he happened to be light. He said, "I am the light." That's a big trigger phrase. Again, in the Bible, God, when he was asked by Moses, "So who are you? Who are you?" He says, "I am that which I am." That's how he responds. And that's to try and express a whole lot of different things that couldn't really be summed up very well. It means that I am Moses. I am. You can't figure me out. You can't fathom me out. A human being cannot possibly comprehend God in his fullness. I just simply am. It's more than that, though. I am who I am. I cannot be changed, cannot be controlled. I am. It means more. It means that I am, and I don't need anyone else in order for me to be. I just simply am, independent of everything else. I am unchangeable. I don't need to be anything else. I will not be anything else. I am eternal. I am all that you need. All you need for salvation. All you need for life. I am faithful. I am no less than that. I am God. So what more can be added? All of these things are sort of summed up in the phrase, "I am." So every single time that Jesus stands and says, "I am," all the hearers know exactly what's going on. This is one of the great trigger phrases of him saying, "He is God. I am." And so, many of his hearers wanted to kill him. They understood what he was saying when he says, "I am." He was saying, "I am the one who spoke to Moses. I am the one who spoke to Elijah. I am the one who was there. I am." And so, they rush to get stones to stone him to death. Then he escapes, but later on, he will be crucified on the charge of blasphemy. So he's saying, "I am God, and I've come, and I want you to understand in what way at this moment. I am light." And his hearers don't like listening to this because he's implying that they're in darkness. A lot of people who are in darkness don't want to know about the darkness. They don't want to know that they're stumbling about. Now, my fear of the dark came to me as an adult, not as a child. As a child, I was quite comfortable with the dark, but as an adult, there's a few moments which made me absolutely terrified. When I was a young teenager, I was on a fishing boat, just off Stornoway, where I come from. And it got unbelievably dark, unbelievably quickly. It was late autumn, so it was quite dark anyway, but the sky became so overcast that it became dark much, much earlier. And so we were trying to get home, but we couldn't see where we were going. Truly terrifying. You see, on the sea, there aren't any landmarks that you can work off. There's just water and rocks. And you're kind of hoping that the boat will stay on the water rather than the rocks. As you go back, you know the rough direction of home, but you also know there's an awful lot of obstacles in the way. There's an awful lot of rocks that you don't want to hit on the way. And it became nighttime, and there was no moon, there was no stars, there was nothing. Pitch dark. And all I could hear was the waves hitting the rocks. I could hear it. It sounded like it was all around us. I could hear the water hitting the rocks. And we were in the darkness. We didn't know which way to go. We didn't know exactly where we were. And our lives were on the line. That's when I developed something of a fear of the dark. At the very least, a very healthy respect of the dark if I'm on a boat. What I would have given at that moment for a lighthouse. Yeah. As it was, we ended up having to go very, very slowly and with the use of a stick in front of us try and gauge where the rocks were, and we didn't come through that entirely unscathed. Oh, but for a lighthouse. To illuminate, to show us where the rocks were, to see where the dangers lay. Well, when Jesus stands there and says, I am the light, that's the sort of import he's wanting to give. It's not, oh, I can make life a little bit better for you. It's that I am like a lighthouse, able to show you the rocks that you're about to run yourself up against. I can save your life. That's the import of this light. And so, when he claims to be the light of the world, not just the Jews, but of the entire world, all of us, that there is no other light except through him, that there is darkness except through him, we have a choice. We can either, for the first time, see, or we shy away, prefer the dark, stay away from the light. That's the choice open to us. Of course, for those of us who were blind, who have come into the light, there's a very different sort of choice that is open to us. There's a great saying in English, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. I don't think that's true, if I'm entirely honest. If you're in the land of the blind and you have one eye, you shut up. You don't tell anybody that you can see. You know, you don't let on because you're the freak. You're this oddity that they're all going to... No, you're wrong. You should be rejected. You should be shunned. You're not like us. And I'm afraid that when we live in a world of darkness, if you've got the light inside of you, it can be a bit like that. We're supposed to be different. We're supposed to be odd because we're light in darkness, and the darkness doesn't like the light. Or at least that's what Jesus said. But the light always defeats the shadows. It always defeats the dark. You put a light on, the dark has to flee, coalesce into little shadows far away. And we're to live as light. What a wonderful thing that God says that I will put the light within you, that you will be like God dwelling amongst men. It's a momentous thing. So let me finish then by using the words of Jesus to encourage those who have seen the light and to encourage others who have not yet seen the light. In Matthew 5, in verse 14, speaking to his people, he says this, "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand. And it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." Being light is not for our own glory, but so that others will give glory to our Father who is in heaven. Let's pray.